Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Judah Sanders.
And this is the Engaging Culture Podcast, presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we dive into the not at all controversial topic of immigration.
Oh, fun.
We'll have a lighthearted, not really, discussion of what is going on at our southern border, what is making progress difficult, what can be done about it, and how can we adopt a biblical posture on topics pertaining to immigration. All of that and more on this episode. Well, here we go. Season 5, episode something of the Engaging Culture Podcast. Pastor Judah, I enjoyed your interjection there in the open.
I do what I can.
Eight
years of seminary paid off.
Yeah, that's that you aced that class. I can tell. Best thing you saw this week?
Well, actually, we're recording a little bit earlier than we normally do because I'm going out of the country. So I don't know what the best thing I'll have actually seen is when this airs. But I have a suspicion that it's probably going to be the legendary Taj Mahal. I'm going to India very soon.
There we go.
And I will be in Agra, India. It's one of the cities I'll be visiting, which is the home of the Taj Mahal. And the Taj Mahal was built by the king to show his love and devotion to the woman that he loved. He built her a building. So all you ladies out there, if your husbands are not building you palaces to display their love, we don't want Tiffany's jewelry and perfume anymore. It's not acceptable. We want Taj Mahals. Am I right, ladies? Amen. So I think that's the best thing that I have seen that week. We'll see if that's true when I come back.
All right.
What about you?
Well, I am unable to forthtell into this coming week, so I will do a foray into this last week. You know, in our last episode, I shared about seeing a gentleman from our church who I'd connected with over COVID and seeing him for the first time, which is great. Kind of in that same vein, this last week, I saw my parents for the first time in a few months. They like to travel in the wintertime now that they're retired folks, and they were gone for a long time. And they were in the Eastern time zone, so we just didn't communicate with them a ton. It's just a little difficult to like find a time when we're around. So I'm glad they're back. I enjoy having them around, and it was fun to just have dinner with them and spend some time together. So that was a good thing. All right, immigration. What is going on right now, Pastor Judah?
A lot. But essentially, the simplest version is that former President Trump had a immigration policy that just made it more restrictive. It was more restrictive over who could come in, where they could come in, how they could come in, how long they could stay, how they could get certain visas. There are several different types of visas, but how they could get them and whether it was it was more difficult under President Trump's administration. And that's not necessarily a partisan thing. President Obama had a more restrictive immigration policy than currently President Biden does. So President Biden has an immigration policy that makes it a little bit easier, not a lot easier, but a little bit easier to get visas and to come into this country and stay by legal means. But also, this current administration is existing in a time where there are a lot of push factors, and push factors are kind of the things that are happening in somebody's country that kind of move them to try to migrate to the United States, and sometimes to do so using undocumented methods. And so what we've seen in this administration is just the number of people that are showing up, particularly to our southern border, has skyrocketed and are overwhelming a system that was already overwhelmed, that was already understaffed, that was already underfunded. And you know, the things that are happening in people's countries have gotten worse. And some of that has to do with United States foreign policy. Some of it has nothing to do with us.
Right.
But it is moving them to come here. And we are just having this influx that is really harming particularly sanctuary cities, sometimes called blue cities. So cities that have a slightly more relaxed disposition position towards immigrants. And but what's also happening is that a lot of the migrants who are coming into the country are coming with families. Large percentage of them are spouses and children of either U.S. citizens or former immigrants. And so it's putting this huge strain on the education system, on the healthcare system, on the economy. And our economy is already struggling, and our healthcare system is already struggling. So it's just really a conversation about resources, that there's a lot of need and not a lot of resources, and people are really concerned about it.
And the sheer number of people that we're talking about is pretty staggering.
That's right.
In the month of December 2023, U.S. immigration agents intercepted 300,000, more than 300,000 people trying to enter the country. So that is a lot. I don't know. Greater Roseville, where you talk Roseville, Rockland, Lincoln, you're maybe at 300,000. So that's the, probably a little lower. That's the population of those cities every single month. And we're getting into springtime where there tends to be more. So those numbers likely have not gone down.
That's right.
And what's wild to me also is just where folks are coming from.
That's right.
You've got a lot from Central South America, the Caribbean, Cuba, Haiti, but even something I learned in preparing for this episode, that Chinese migrants are the fastest growing group of immigrants who are showing up here.
As well as Indians.
That's right. And first of all, the journey they have to get through to get here, the desperation they're escaping. And one thing that's notable is simply that, especially for Chinese immigrants, a lot of them are religious refugees. They're Christians. They're fleeing persecution of communist China. So people are coming for all sorts of reasons, but the resource issue, safety issue, both for the immigrants themselves and for, you know, the other broader safety concerns, there's just a lot. There's a lot going on here, and it's not hard to see why a lot of people are stressed about it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that It's also we only see the people who are like coming in and the strain that puts on the system, and not also seeing the amount that we're turning away. Since May, this administration has turned away 233,000 migrants from 152 countries. And so they're also dealing with the fact that there's a backlog that was greatly exacerbated by COVID, up to 2 years that it can take to get through that. And again, if you don't have enough people doing the work of processing those cases, looking at those cases, and figuring out, you know, what different folks' situation is and answer is, then you end up in this sort of situation.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're dealing with.
One of my favorite podcasts is put out by Christianity Today. It's called The Bulletin. And in their episode that came out on March 8th, they brought on Bree Stensrud, who's the director of Women of Welcome. It's a Christian organization that supports immigrants. And it's a great podcast. Go subscribe to the podcast and listen to it. It's a terrific interview. And she was highlighting the brokenness of our system is a huge, huge issue, which is like, duh, everyone knows that. But specifically, she was referring to things like the adjudication process for somebody who is picked up by Border Patrol can take 4 to 6 years. So it's easily kind of taken advantage of, or even for people that are just legitimate going, I am facing severe economic hardship, I'm fleeing persecution, something else is going on. They're coming here knowing, okay, if I get caught, I can live in country for 4 to 6 years while my case is being processed. And you just see the harm that causes on a number of fronts. It simply highlights the brokenness of the system.
Yeah. In addition, there has been a real movement toward sophistication of the illegal enterprises that are bringing people over, kind of the trafficking enterprises. Yeah. Those have actually gotten really sophisticated. I know for me, sometimes when I would think about human smugglers, you know, I'm picturing a dusty truck and they're covered in blankets and, you know, but that it's actually, it's become more sophisticated. So that's been a larger challenge. And then the other thing is that it's really hard to put this whole thing in scope to know if it's unreasonable or not.
Yeah.
Because there are some who are greatly exaggerating what's happening or sprinkling in pieces that are not true. For example, you know, there are narratives that, you know, most people who immigrate over here are criminals. Right. Most who immigrate over here are taking our jobs and our money, those sorts of things, and that are kind of funneled by xenophobia and bigotry and prejudice. Yeah. But then on the other hand, there are some folks who are under discussing this, who are not acknowledging it as a real challenge.
Yeah.
That we're facing. And so it's hard to know kind of whose kind of position is right and who's wrong and what our role should be as a country. How much do we help? Because historically, kind of everybody's an immigrant here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we do have a limited number right. of resources. And so essentially our system is overwhelmed, overworked, underfunded, under-resourced, and also a very convenient political football.
Yay. We'll be right back.
So we're talking about immigration, and we're talking about how it's a real convenient football to be thrown back and forth. I'm curious, Pastor Brian, why do you think it is so difficult to make any progress on this issue as a country? Does it being a convenient football have anything to do with that? Talk to us.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And to highlight the interview I was talking about earlier, she was asked specifically, is partisan gridlock the reason why we can't make any progress on this issue? And she said it absolutely is. And that, and I'll sort of paraphrase some of her remarks and then, you know, have some of mine as well to start sort of with mine. There is an incentive issue when it comes to our political landscape, and a few things are in play. Number one, hyperpolarization means if you cooperate, you're the enemy. So there is this really intense need to kind of pick a side, which is just extraordinarily unhealthy. But I won't say more about that. We talk about that on this podcast all the time. Secondarily, the incentive structure for our actual representatives is highly problematic. So you've got, and this goes back to broader issues in our political system. I am a huge issue that I care very deeply about is our approach to primaries in the political system, because I think it's part of why we have such extreme candidates is the way that our primary system works in the vast majority of places in this country. But as it pertains to this issue, if you are a Democrat, for example, and you give an inch on securing the border and saying we actually do need to secure the border, you are at risk of getting primaried by somebody who is to your left on that topic and will thus, you know, paint you as some sort of anti-immigrant, xenophobic, blah, 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 all of that. And you risk losing your job. On the right, if you talk at all about taking care of the Dreamers, if you talk at all about a pathway to citizenship, if you talk at all about some of these more kind of compassionate approaches to immigrants, you run a similar risk of getting primaried from someone on your right who's going to paint you as soft on immigration and all of the different issues that come from there. Furthermore, much like abortion has functioned in the recent past and arguably up until today, and I say this as someone who is pro-life, a pro-life whole life ethic, which, by the way, immigration to me is a pro-life issue, the incentive structure is such that politicians don't have a lot of motivation to get anything done. I mean, we referenced it in our last episode, they hashed out this bipartisan bill that was going to really strengthen border security in some very significant ways. Well, President Trump said don't pass it because he benefits from the chaos, because he wants to run on criticizing Biden for his border policies and then try to fix the border once he is in office. Well, the idea then is that if we all move forward and sign off on this bill that is going to save lives, that is going to help people, it is disadvantageous for President Trump and for other Republicans politically. Now, I talked on last episode about how gross I think all of that is, and I'm not going to defend that perspective for a second. I will, however, acknowledge the incentive structure once again. What if we're just going to talk about their own interests? what incentive do they have to move this bill forward and thus allow a Democratic administration to count it as a win? So for all of these reasons, a structure that favors staying in power, that favors kind of hyper-partisanship on either side, there's just not a lot to encourage our leaders to work together. And unfortunately, the poorest of the poor from around the world are the ones who are suffering because of it.
That's right. That's right. As I listen to you talk about the incentive structure, the danger with that is that we're talking about real people, right? Real people's lives, right? And, you know, in 2023, it was like the highest amount of migrants we ever had, 2 million that came into the country or that tried to come into the country. And, you know, those people matter. They are made in the image of God. And so we certainly, while we have to have some tough conversations about immigration and our policies, our rules, we cannot continue to use this in these partisan ways when people, I mean, I was, you know, when preparing for this podcast, I watched this video of this woman crawling under a barbed wire fence trying to get in and bringing her baby underneath that fence. And that's pretty dangerous. And so, Pastor Brian, how should we be thinking about and kind of framing this issue as believers? How do we, because there's a tension here that we're wrestling with of a lot of us want to be really compassionate, right? A lot of us, but also, you know, there's got to be boundaries. There's fire codes in this building. We want everybody in Roseville to come to Bridgeway on a Sunday, but we also have like fire codes that we have to listen to.
Yeah, and I want to go back for a second because I didn't necessarily misspeak, but I didn't get to the kind of the whole of what I was trying to say. I mixed up my words a little bit. Talking about incentives a little bit also is, and this is where it ties into abortion, is for, unfortunately for a lot of politicians, they benefited it from it as an issue to run on rather than an issue where you're actually trying to save babies' lives. And here, immigration is so polarizing that politicians sort of benefit from the chaos to the right or to the left. So that's a problem as well, is that we continue to have chaos because it inflames people. I mean, there's research even to show that for so-called family values voters, the issues they care about the most, immigration's at the top of the list. So if you can inflame people about this topic, you're going to have more success electorally.
It's always interesting to me that it is such an inflammatory issue because I was thinking about even in my own life, like, okay, how is my life actually directly impacted by a lot of immigrants coming in? And there aren't a lot of ways in my own life that I see a direct correlation that my life is harder because the people are coming. And so I think that we should really think about, okay, what are the actual impacts of this and not over or under highlight them.
And I think for us living here, the impacts are not huge. However, that is absolutely not the case in tons of other places in this country.
Arizona, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia.
It is a massive day-to-day issue. And then and I know you would agree with this, that on some level, we have to develop the ability to care a lot about issues that don't, that don't necessarily impact us personally.
For sure.
You were talking
about— But not to buy into this narrative that, if it's not true, that my life is sucky because of the Mexican who's working at the food.
Oh, taco like somehow you know that's like, really negatively affecting
you. You know what I'm saying? Like just to be, if it is, then it is. Sure. And for sure, like say that and let that inform the conversation. But to really look at like, is it?
Yeah.
Is it? And and so I don't need to be enraged about certain in the ways that people are and talking about it in the ways that they are. I have not gotten a job because somebody came into the country.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. So to get to your question from a moment ago about how should we think about this, I think there are a few elements that we need to consider. Number one, I talked about how this is a pro-life issue. And I'm a huge advocate for expanding our definition of pro-life, that there is a sacredness to human life that applies to how we think about a number of topics, and that includes immigration. we need to think about this as a humanitarian crisis, that these are real people who are suffering at the border. The answer to that is not throw open the borders and let everyone in. The answer to that is not turn everyone around immediately and leave them to die. That there is some sort of intermediate space to talk about real solutions, that we can have a secure border. We can have a process that adjudicates these cases more quickly. We can have an immigration policy that values the reality of limited resources in the United States of America while still respecting and honoring the human dignity of those who are seeking entry into our land and respects the real I mean, who's to say? You and I were born in this country. In the 20th century, which what is like, luck. You want to talk about that's winning luck. The lottery of that's like right. times and places to be
that's
born.
Right.
Who's to say if you or I were born in those situations that we would not be making those same decisions that they're making? And again, I'm not sitting here advocating some sort of Wild West, like the system is broken and must be fixed, but it must be fixed in a manner that respects the dignity of those who are trying to come here.
Well, and sometimes a part of the narrative that can be disingenuous is that we actually like this idea of like our borders are like wide open and just anybody can get in has never been the case under any presidency. Right. There have always been limits that are known from the beginning that we have this many thousands of this sort of visa, INAs or LPRs or whatever that we can give out every year. This many siblings, this many children can come in. And so I think for sure the conversation needs to be about like what do the rules look like? What do the caps look like? But I think that this narrative that any of our presidents have ever just been like, hey, anybody can come in, no process, no nothing, is not true. And more than anything, the biggest impact to this circumstance is that the system is under-resourced. If there are two of us checking people in and there are 10,000 people that need to be checked in, yeah. you can do that math. Yeah. The other thing that I think that is important is that when we think about what does it look like to secure our borders, what we think about is walls and fences and guns.
Yeah.
And those are probably tools that are useful in whatever ways that they are.
Yeah.
But there are actually a lot of really nuanced changes that need to be made. So, for example, there are a lot of immigrants, over half of people who are trying to come into this country don't know how the system works. And there aren't, like in our legal system, our court system, if I can't afford a lawyer, a court-appointed attorney is provided for me right. To whatever value that is. That's a small thing that might be worth thinking about is, okay, these people need to understand what their options are so that they're making the right decisions. If you don't know how the system works, you are more likely to end up in the wrong place, trying to do it the wrong way and clogging up the system. So I think for all of us who are deeply concerned about the border and want it to be more secure and want to feel more safe, I think there's something valuable about thinking about and researching what are some of the other ways that that looks.
Yeah, that's well said. For our last segment, before we get to the all-important game section, we want to talk about the issue from a specifically Christian perspective. Yeah, Pastor Judah, right. How can our faith inform the way we think about immigration and immigrants?
Well, first of all, I think that our scripture repeatedly highlights that Jesus placed a large emphasis in prioritizing foreigners, immigrants, neighbors, right? Like that sort of language is talked about a lot. So I think that our default needs to be a deep prioritization and a deep consideration of the people who we consider immigrants, foreigners, et cetera. I also think a lot about how Jesus himself was an immigrant.
Yeah.
You know, that when he goes to hide from Herod, he immigrates to Egypt, a country where, you know, he may not have spoken the language. His family may not have spoken the language, may not have been used to the food, you know, needed to be someplace because their lives were in danger in their home country. So I think that that's the first thing. The second thing is that we have been called as believers to an ethic of generosity. And I don't think that that means that we don't have boundaries, we don't have rules, we don't have systems and processes. But I think that as believers, when we are presented with the option to be either more generous or less generous, our knee-jerk reaction actually needs to be more generous, yeah. Right? Like that needs to be kind of our heart posture. And I think a lot of the reason that we're not is because we don't know immigrants.
Yeah.
We don't actually, or we don't think we know them, right? Because when we picture immigrants, we picture, frankly, a Latinx person in cutoff jeans and maybe who's, you know, a little bit dirty, yeah. Right? That's what we picture. But we have Ukrainian brothers and sisters that are immigrants that have, right. Had to go through the process to get in this country. Again, Chinese, Indian, and their stories help you to really see how serious we should take this conversation and this discussion and how carefully we should move in it. Because again, real people, real situations. I mean, even, our in the State of the Union, there was that conversation about immigration that Biden engaged in a little bit. Even when he was talking about the young lady, you can hear that she has this real story, right? That this real thing has happened to her.
Yeah.
And so I think that starting there is critical. Yeah. What about you?
A few things stand out to me. I think number one, a few of these are just going to be general. These are kind of topics I bring up from time to time, just over and over again about different issues. Number one, we cannot be discipled by political parties in this. They're just going to lead us nowhere good. In fact, that interview I cited earlier, they cited some Lifeway research, which showed that 26% of evangelicals said the Bible was their primary means of forming their views on immigration.
That's wild.
That is too low. And it really scares me to think what answers the other 74 would give. Because frankly, there's just not a lot of kind of high rating spaces that are having really healthy conversations about immigrations. And I think another thing, just go listen to the interview. It was great. But something Russell Moore pointed out in the interview was he said that we can totally have differing views on a lot of elements when it comes to immigration. As he cited, yeah. There's no Bible verse that says the United States shall allow this many people in to cross their borders per year. We can have huge, differing views on how many, on what the process should look like, all of that. Where we can't disagree is on the value of immigrants.
That's right.
Because they're image bearers of God. And I think a huge motivation to fix our broken system, it's like this macro example of clarity is kindness, to figure out a way to devote the resources, the money, and all of that to create a system that is a little bit more clear so that those who are in these desperate situations know what to expect, their cases can be handled, and whether they're allowed to stay or not, we're at least able to work them through a system that is adequately resourced. One other element I want to highlight, because after listening to that interview, I was just searching around and reading more about Women of Welcome, the organization that the woman who was on the podcast came from. And she had a post on Instagram, 4 things Border Patrol officers ask them to pray for. Because that's another part of this that I don't know, frankly, doesn't get enough attention.
Yeah, we don't talk enough about it.
You've got people that are trying to enforce this broken system and how much that messes them up. So a few things that they have asked others, like immigration advocates, Border Patrol agents have asked immigration advocates to pray for. Number one, the rising suicide rates among officers who witness and experience so many tragic life events as they help serve legal asylum seekers and also encounter those who seek to enter illegally and cause harm. That the work that these individuals are doing is having a severe impact on them. Secondly, and this is not at all a surprise, this would be related, the recruitment of good people. That this is a challenging issue in all areas of the military, but for Border Patrol, you got to have people who can pass a polygraph. You got to have people who are willing to move their families to these areas near the border,
right.
Which, for any who have been there,
can be
not
tough.
Exactly like prime real estate, right? Not the best places to live. The application process is very difficult for folks to become Border Patrol agents, which it needs to be because we need good people in those roles, but to have people who can really invest and be the people of integrity to do that. Officer safety is something they ask for prayer for as well, that they're encountering all of these difficult situations, and then their own families who have to kind of live with the challenges that they face. So we can talk about immigrants and the need for clarity for their sake. Let's also not forget Border Patrol agents who are, by and large, people trying to do their job, serve their country, serve their family, and are stuck in really, really difficult positions.
And not the least of which is just the amount of work, yeah. Right? And so to that end, I think it's really important to remember that whatever new system is in place, regardless of who's the president and who the Congress is, right? Because this is actually a largely congressional issue. Yeah. That it will not solve the issue overnight. And so we need to go into that. Like, we're behind the ball already. Again, however many millions of backlogged cases there are. Like, if nobody came to the border starting today, period, and we were just working with the backlogged cases, I mean, you're talking about years and years and years of catching up. And so there's not a simple, quick solution. And I think a part of the framing of this for me is to remember, almost to think about it like the sanctification process, in that I was once a foreigner to God.
Yeah.
I because of my choices, my sin, I was a foreigner to Him, and He adopted me, yeah. And He helped me to work through, and helps me, is helping me work through my stuff and sanctifying me, and that's a process. Yeah. And so to expect that even if your favorite candidate comes in and you know, has all of these policies that sound really good to you, we're still going to have to navigate that, navigate this as a challenge, if nothing else. And one of the things that the lady said in the interview that you've been referencing, that we were listening to a little bit earlier, was that I'll say it like this, there are some of us who see this as a humanitarian issue and some of us who see it as a security issue. Yeah. And it is both.
Yes.
And we have to be able to hold both. And the way that we'll know we're successful with that is that both sides should be pretty a little ticked off about it. Both yeah. sides should be a little like, I didn't get everything that I wanted. I got a few things that I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. And that what we want is a solution, that's not right. something to rally support for our side.
That's right. That's right. Again, we just cannot play with people's lives.
Nope.
You know, and we cannot be complicit in politicians playing with people's lives. And so, Pastor Brian, what are some things that we can do just as, you know, regular folks, you know, you and I, Joe and Schmo. I'm definitely Joe, though.
You're the Schmo.
That we can do to be helpful in these kinds of situations, macro and micro.
Yeah, I think we're watching our inputs. We're not letting people who want to demonize immigrants speak into our understanding of the issue. We're not letting those who want to violate the image of God and the language that they use in describing immigrants speak into this issue that we recognize kind of hysteria in any form. I think we pray. We remember to pray for immigrants.
Right.
We remember the broader value of hospitality for those that feel led to get involved with an organization like our partner organization here, World Relief. We've got folks who are involved in serving refugees that come to us through World Relief and any number of organizations. I mean, even the organization Women of Welcome, which we referred to earlier, to educate ourselves on the issue. There are lots of good Christian books on the topic of how do we think about immigration. And I think a little bit broadening our imagination to go, illegal immigration is a real problem. And I have no problem saying, yeah, we need a secure border. But also to broaden our imagination and how we think about immigration as a whole, to not think of it from a place of fear from top to bottom.
That's right.
And to think of it from a place of human dignity and how can we promote human flourishing beyond just ourselves and how can we recognize the image of God in others. So there's a character and heart formation aspect in that for us as well. What about you? What am I missing?
Yeah, I think we should always rehearse our own histories, that all of us came to this country because our ancestors migrated here.
Yeah.
It makes me speak very gently about and toward immigrants and have less of a them versus us kind of position. Yeah. You know, my ancestors were not born in this country. They, you know, if you trace it all the way back, my ancestors came here, and so did most everybody who's listening. So I think that that's a really important thing to rehearse. I think that when we're looking for systems or policies that we want to either support or not support, we should be looking for that balance of humanitarian and security, right? So is this humane? Mm-hmm. Does this take into deep consideration the people that will be experiencing it?
Yeah.
I think that that's really important. And then the last thing in terms of just how we think about it, I think go make some friends who are not from this country.
That's good.
There is something about, you know, I go, there's a bakery. It is a Romanian, it's owned by a Romanian family who migrated over here. And when you have faces and like hearts,
yes,
and I see how hard they work. I see how kind they are. I see how, you know, how they work so hard to follow the rules and the laws, and how they also have deep concerns about one of their family members being deported suddenly, that they avoid certain public things because they don't want to risk this family member getting deported. And when you have those kinds of relationships, I think it really shifts the way that you're kind of approaching this. And I think the other thing is we've got to believe that this is possible.
Yeah.
That it's a big thing to have to overcome. But again, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. The history of our country is that we've always overcome big things.
Yep.
Things that seemed impossible to surmount.
Yep.
Then we did it. Yep. And so those are some things that I think would be helpful. And again, would encourage you to look into Christian immigration organizations that do advocacy work for immigrants and also for the people who work with them. And maybe think about some ways of supporting those organizations.
We'll be right back.
Well, we always try to end with a little bit of fun and levity. We're going to play a game that we've played on here before. It's called Song Association. We're adding a little twist, though. So the way Song Association is normally played is we have a random word generator on a computer in the studio. It's going to give us a word. And normally, it's you try to come up with a song that has that word either in the title of the song or in the lyrics of the song. But what we're going to do this time is we're going to get a word, and then we're going to go back and forth and try to come up with as many songs with that word in the title or in the lyrics as possible until one of us can't think of another song with it in the title or the lyrics.
5 seconds.
Five. Okay.
That seem right? That's how long we get. If we can't get it in 5 seconds, we lose. I'm going to lose. All right. Let's do five of them. We really planned this before we went on air here. So five of them, and you get 5 seconds.
All right. All right.
Go. Give us our first word.
First word is still. STILL. Still.
You're still the one. Shania Twain.
I'm still in love with you by, that's not Boyz II Men. Who's that boy group? And if I ever fall. You know what song I'm talking about?
I do not.
Oh, well.
I think you're
I still count. I'm not. It's a real word. I mean, a real song.
Sorry,
four,
noise, everyone.
Three.
I don't know. I'm doing terrible. All right, I lose round one.
Great.
Love Do you have it. Another one still in it? Not instantly. That's all I needed to hear. All right, moving on.
Okay, fine. I already won the point. All right. The next word is can. C-A-N. Can.
I'll go first.
Can you feel the love tonight from Lion King? I like this game.
I hate this game. The word can, which is in a million songs.
That's why I chose it.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know.
Well,
I guess I lose again.
Two points for this
segment is going great.
Why don't you?
Yeah, maybe if I randomize the word, that'll help. The word is crazy.
Do you want to go first?
You Drive Me Crazy. I think that's Britney Spears.
Okay. I got Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. I remember when.
I've got Crazy Train. No, Crazy Train is the artist. Dang it. This is so embarrassing.
That's good. I only had one more. Crazy in Love by Beyonce.
Oh, love, so crazy right now. Oh, goodness. All right. This game is dumb, and I don't like it. But we're going to say the last or the fourth word, even though I've already lost, is time. Till the end of time.
Time after time.
Time, Hootie and the Blowfish.
A Time to Love, Stevie Wonder, featuring Kim Burrell.
Give me just a little more time. Three.
Yep.
Two. One. Hey, I'm not going to get skunked. All right.
There are probably a million words.
A million of them. Yeah, we're terrible at this game.
All right.
The last word is people.
Perfect People by The Walls Group.
Looking for all the lonely people.
I'm almost 1,000% sure. And Where's the Love? There's the word people. I'm finishing the whole song. What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't got no mama.
There you go. Yeah, no, you got
oh,
it.
Oh, people, yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay.
Let's see. People, get ready. Jesus is coming. Soon you'll be going home.
I mean, is the opening paragraph in the Constitution technically a song?
Not
we the people knowledge. Of the United States.
I don't think government documents was an option for this one.
I think I'm out of time. Yep.
All right, bonus one. Don't Stop Believing. Streetlights, people.
Oh,
all right, that's the closest I'm ever going to get to singing. This game was stupid, and I hope we never do it again.
I liked it. Can't wait to do it again.
All right, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Engaging Culture.